Up, Up, and Away, Episode 26, An Origin Story. Hello and welcome to Up, Up, and Away, the podcast dedicated to anything and everything Superman. I am your host, Mario Benessi. It's here. Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice has officially hit the shelves as of July 19th, which was this Tuesday. And I have still not gotten my copy of it yet, which is really weird. You see, I really wanted to get the Batman v Superman Amazon exclusive edition that had the Superman statue. You could either get a Superman statue or a Batman statue, and it would run you about $116. So I ordered mine last Friday, and usually with pre-orders, what happens is you order it, and then they ship it out either the day before or the day of. So you get your product that you pre-ordered the day that it is released, or the day before that it is released. According to Amazon.com, my order has been placed, but will not ship until July 25th, and will not arrive until at least July 29th. I think Amazon really needs to reevaluate what they're doing with their pre-ordering game. Seriously, that's $126, including shipping. Or that's with the shipping included from the original $116 that I spent to get this exclusive edition that came with four copies of the movie and a statue. My hard-earned dollars have been put on the internet counter, if you will, and I have still not received my product. So I'm a little frustrated with that. So while everybody else is getting their copies of the movie, I am still waiting to get my copy. So, yeah. But on the bright side, I purchased a Blu-ray player. I know, it's kind of weird, right? The person that is majoring in film and wants to go off and do big things in Hollywood had not had a Blu-ray player until last week. It's really weird. You'd think that I would be about it. Especially since I am really, really into going through DVDs and looking at all the bonus features. I love seeing how a movie starts from a concept and then goes through production, and all the phases of production, up through the theatrical release, and sometimes even beyond. Sometimes they'll have bonus features going past the cultural impact that a film will have, such as Star Wars. One of my favorite bonus features from any kind of movie is back from 2004 when they re-released the Star Wars trilogy on DVD. They had a fourth disc, and that was bonus material. And on that bonus disc, there was a documentary that was at least 2.5 hours long called Empire of Dreams. And I remember watching that so many times, very informative, and it was so integral to my understanding of the original Star Wars trilogy. I just love bonus features. They help me fully understand the process. And, you know, if you know a lot of things about film or how films are made, you get to see other ways how films can be made. You get to see the alternative methods that people have taken into bringing their ideas to the silver screen, which is really cool. And especially if you try to figure out how they're going to do special effects. Because if you look at the way that some special effects were done, then you can apply that knowledge to another set of special effects. And then if you want to do something with special effects and say you learned something from the bonus features, like I have learned so much from bonus features, from special effects background stuff, and I can apply that information to whatever I choose to do, which is really cool. So, I mean, while I'm not learning how to make movies or do model building or green screening or blue screening for any kinds of movies in college currently, I'm learning how to analyze and interpret films, and that's been going on for about 4 years. I'm learning all these things from the bonus features on my Blu-rays, well, now my Blu-rays, and my DVDs, which is awesome. So I've been pretty much going to film school since I had a DVD player. But yeah, I'm absolutely in love with this Blu-ray player. It's such a world of difference. And yeah, I've played a couple of my DVDs on my Blu-ray player, and yeah, it does upgrade the video quality a little bit, but it's not that much, honestly. You really have to get Blu-rays to experience the Blu-ray experience, which kind of sounds like a no-brainer, but it's so well done if you get the right movies. Because, I mean, yeah, they're going to have films that the transfer isn't exactly the strongest and the picture quality isn't exactly the greatest. It's a step up above a DVD, but it's not as great as it can be. So if you look at films like Pulp Fiction or Forbidden Planet, the colors and the images are going to pop. I find myself just so enthralled by this single device. I can't stop, and my friends can attest to this. I cannot shut up about this freaking Blu-ray player. And I think to myself, is this what a caveman must have been like when he discovered fire? Just mesmerized by this technology. I don't know, but I feel like that might be similar, because I can't shut up about this thing. It's great. Best $75 or so that I spent. Fortunately, I got it on sale. And I mean, I had a couple problems trying to connect my Blu-ray player to the Wi-Fi, but I figured, oh, well, it's probably just because I'm trying to connect it to a college Wi-Fi, and it's not like having your own personal Wi-Fi, you know, if you owned a house or something. This is for a college campus. And I figured it out. You know, I forgot I had to register my device, which is a thing that I have to do for all my electronic devices. But since I haven't gotten any new electronic devices since I started college, which was, I think the last one I really got was my cell phone, but I hadn't had to register a device for so long that it completely slipped my mind that that was a thing that I had to do for it to work on the Wi-Fi. So I figured that out, and now I can watch Netflix and YouTube and access Pandora all on my Blu-ray player. It's awesome. I'm incredibly happy with this purchase. On another note, I have returned from my trip from Pennsylvania. I went to go see my grandparents over in Clearfield, which is really cool. It's a really quiet town. Not much happens there. It's kind of sad, though, that one of the highlights of my trip was going to Walmart. It's a really, really small town, and for me, there are things to do there. There's a guitar store and an antique store that's like five stories. It used to be a department store. I forgot the name of it, but it was a department store at one point, and then they closed down, and then the building remained because, I mean, it's a really historical district. Very, very 1800s based. You get all this great architecture. It's so scenic over there. But anyway, the department store closed down, and so they turned it into a antiques mall. And they have so many different vendors coming in and selling things. And they had some comic books and stuff there. But sometimes, you know, it's hit or miss on antique stores and comic books. Sometimes they think they know what they have, and sometimes they know what they have. And this was kind of one of the cases where they thought they knew what they had. They had a couple of issues of the New Adventures of Superboy title, and they were charging like $3 an issue, and it was kind of pricey. And the ones that they had, you could find easily for a dollar at a comic book store. So I had to skip on those. Unfortunately, the other four floors of the antique store were closed for business for that day, because we came in about 15 minutes or so before they closed. So we didn't get to go up to the other four floors, but if we had gone up there, there would have been a lot more pop culture memorabilia, and definitely some more Superman stuff, likely. I've seen a good amount of stuff in there. But yeah, we just kind of browsed around in there for a little bit, and that's always one of my favorite stops to go into whenever I visit Clearfield. I just love going in that building, because you never know what you find, and I just love going to antique stores, honestly. It's really cool. You get to see relics from the past. It's like going to a museum, except you can actually take things home with you. I made a trip over to Penn State College, and it's a really nice place, honestly. If you aren't aware, Penn State, I mean, it's in State College, which is the actual name of the city itself. But the college is very well integrated into the city. So the college is the city. So you have everything there, which is so radically different from where I go to, which is Florida Atlantic University. For FAU, it's Boca Raton, and then there's a small section dedicated to Florida Atlantic University. So you have to go off campus to do a lot of things, while all the stuff in Penn State, you can walk down the street and go to like three or four different pizza joints, which would be pretty cool. I want to find one of those hole-in-the-wall pizza places where you can just sit down and have a slice. But I did visit the Creamery, which is where Ben and Jerry got their start, and I got Peachy Paterno, just like I do every time I go there. It's one of my favorites. And then back in Clearfield, I went to Ollie's, which is like a discount place, kind of like Big Lots, but a little bit smaller of a chain. They get in a lot of things that stores used to carry, and then they mark the prices down tremendously low. And I got a couple of items there before in the past that were Superman related. I remember back in like 2008 or so, I got some Superman Returns memorabilia and merchandise, and so, you know, I still have a couple of those items. A couple of them I don't know where they went, but they were pretty cool. Most notably, a Superman Returns basketball. I remember that. I just don't know where it went. But I also got my copy of, back when DVD players were the thing, the tin case version of all the Superman films, Superman 1 through Superman Returns. I got that there for $20, which was a real good steal, because I think that was going for like $100, $125 at the time. But I got that there, and then I remember picking up my first copies of the Fleischer shorts. It was a two-pack. It was put out by Good Times. And then, most recently, this past trip, I picked up the Man of Steel movie guide kind of thing. It was the $75 book with like all the concept art and background information, which is really fascinating to look at. I learned some stuff in there that I didn't know about the movie, and I've seen that movie like 17 times. And then I also picked up the Superman Files, which is kind of a chronicling of the Man of Steel's history, starting from 1986 to the present day. And it's kind of like a quote-unquote biography of the events that happened for that Superman's life. So you have stuff like Panic in the Sky, Crisis of the Crimson Kryptonite, The Death of Superman, all those post-crisis stories, and it's written in an almost biographical form, and it's compiled, quote-unquote, by Brainiac 5. But it's really cool. So, a lot of pictures, a lot of, quote-unquote, found items, like letters from Lex Luthor or from Clark Kent, or bits of newspaper articles from the Daily Planet. Really cool book. It was like a $75 book. I got it for like $12.99. So that's a steal. Now, unfortunately, this week I'm a bit swamped. The date of recording this episode is Wednesday the 20th, so Tuesday I had a final draft of an essay due, and then for the same class on Thursday I had a rough draft due for a second essay. So, kind of busy, and then I have 2 days where I'm working back-to-back. So as an RA, I'm primary for both of those days, meaning that I get all the calls and I have to deal with all the lockouts and the incidents and stuff. So I'm trying to get this in while I have a moment of free time, but I want to make sure that I get this out to you guys. The editing is not going to be a problem. It's just when I have to record these things, that's kind of conflicts with being primary RA, because that phone that they give you to hold on to for the night, it goes off kind of frequently in the building I'm in, because in this building we have locks that lock automatically. So kids forget their keys very frequently. Either it's a very good night and I only get like 2 calls, or it's a very bad night and I get like 10. One night though, I did have like 23, but that was a completely different building under a completely different set of circumstances. But it was like 23 calls. It was insane. I didn't sleep the entire night. And then I had to work primary the night after. And that wasn't much better. But anyway, I came back to a surprise. And when my friends picked me up from the airport, they had a book that I guess one of my friends had bought for me. And it's a book that I had been eyeing for a while. It's a very short book. Very, very short book. But I figured I'd read it just, you know, as a way of kind of like a thank you to him. Because he really didn't have to do this. So this is Superman, an origin story. It's a small children's book that came out in 2015, but it's actually really fun to read. And I know what you're going to say, Mario, we've already done the origins of Superman. You had like 3 or 4 episodes dedicated solely to that. Yeah, it's not even that long. It's a large type. Unfortunately, I did have to move my schedule around. I was planning on covering another Silver Age issue, a very iconic one at that, but I want to do this. This one's kind of dedicated to my buddy. This is called Superman, an Origin Story, and it's written by Matthew K. Manning and illustrated by Luciano Vecchio. I really hope I pronounced that right. They say the universe began with a big bang. The same could be said for the life of the boy who would become known as Superman. In a distant part of the universe, the planet Krypton is destroyed. A lone rocket ship survives the explosion. On board this tiny spacecraft is a single passenger, a little baby named Kal-El. Kal-El holds tight to the blanket his mother gave him. He dreams of being held in her arms. When the rocket ship stops moving, the baby wakes up. Cold air fills his lungs. He opens his eyes. 2 friendly faces are looking back at him. "We're keeping him, Jonathan," says the woman. Kal-El likes her face. Her smile is warm. It is just like his mother's smile. "Oh, Martha," says the man next to her. "We don't know anything about this child. We can't just take him." Kal-El reaches out. He wraps his hand around the man's finger. Now Jonathan is smiling, too. "What do you think of the name Clark?" asks the woman. With his eyes open wide, Kal-El smiles at the woman. 16 years later, Kal-El is still smiling. His friends call him Clark now. He leads a normal life in the town of Smallville, Kansas. Or at least he did, until one fateful day. Lana Lang tries to recite this week's poem from memory in front of the class. At the same time, Clark wonders what the school is serving for lunch. Suddenly, he realizes that he's looking right through the wall into the cafeteria. "I think I lost my keys," says Mrs. Owens. Mrs. Lancaster sighs. "Again, Gladys?" she asks. "I'll help you look for them." Clark is seeing into the cafeteria. He can hear the cook's conversation. It's like they are in the same room with him. "Are you okay, Clark?" asks Mrs. Brown. Clark nods his head, but he knows that he is anything but okay. Later, the old barn door slowly creaks open. Jonathan and Martha Kent glance at each other. Then they walk inside. Clark's parents seemed worried ever since Clark got home from school that day. He told them what happened at school. He had lots of questions for them. Now, Clark would get some answers. Jonathan lifts up the dusty lid to a wooden box. Clark had never paid much attention to the box before today. Inside is a metal ship. It looks familiar to Clark, but he doesn't know why. "This is where we found you," says Jonathan. Clark doesn't know what to think. Then, his father hands Clark a small box. It was the only thing they had found inside the ship with Clark all those years ago. Jonathan and Martha never could get the box to work, but in Clark's hands, the device lights up. Something that looks like an S fills the screen. Light from the object shines on Clark's forehead. The world falls away around Clark. He no longer sees Smallville. Instead, he sees the planet Krypton around him. Clark watches as a man named Jor-El hands a young infant to his wife Lara. Lara is crying. She is hugging the child tightly. Beneath their feet, the ground begins to shake. They both know they must say goodbye to their son. If baby Kal-El is to survive, he must leave Krypton. Jor-El and Lara place him in a rocket ship. The ship takes off, just as the world around it explodes. Clark opens his eyes. Smallville is back. Jonathan and Martha Kent watch as Clark comes back into focus. Clark looks at them. Then he runs out of the barn, and he keeps on running. Clark doesn't notice that he is moving faster than normal. Soon, he is dashing through the fields with super speed. He doesn't even notice when his feet lift off the ground. He doesn't notice that he's flying until it's already happening. A short while later, Clark returns to the family barn. Clark lands on the ground. For a long moment, he and his parents just stare at each other. Then Clark hugs them. Now he knows who he is. He knows where he came from, and he knows what he has to do on planet Earth. Years later, Clark rides a train. His eyes are closed when he hears the conductor. "Last stop," the man shouts. "Metropolis, everybody off." Clark adjusts his hat as he steps off the train. He looks around at his new home. Clark left Smallville to come to Metropolis. The giant city is very different from his small hometown. It is like no other place he has visited before. but Clark could not go sightseeing just yet. Today is Clark's first day at his new job. He is a reporter for the famous newspaper known as the Daily Planet. Everyone is so busy that they hardly notice Clark at the Daily Planet. Clark's boss, Perry White, is too busy to hand Clark his first assignment. Instead, Perry introduces him to his new partner, Lois Lane. Before Clark knows it, he's trying his best to keep up with Lois. Together, they go to cover a press conference for billionaire Lex Luthor. He reveals his new robot. Clark knows all about Lex Luthor. Long before he moved to Metropolis, Clark had studied Lex's life. The people of Metropolis think Luthor is a hero, but Clark knows better. Lex is an evil billionaire. He will do anything to make money. Suddenly, Lex's giant robot malfunctions. Luthor always tries to save money by cutting costs, so Clark isn't at all surprised. The people in the crowd are too scared and busy to notice that Clark changes outfits. The robot tries to attack a red-headed young boy, but Clark saves him. This is the moment Clark has prepared for all his life. He has been sent to Earth to protect others. Earth's yellow sun gives Clark's alien body extra energy. He gains the powers of super strength, super speed, and invulnerability. A metal robot doesn't stand a chance against the Man of Steel. The red-headed boy snaps a photo of Superman in action. "Superman!" Lois Lane cries out. She is amazed by this new hero of Metropolis. Clark smiles, then he soars into the air. He likes Lois very much, and he likes the name Superman, too. "Look, up in the sky! It's a bird! It's a plane! It's Superman!" It's a really short story, and it's drawn in a similar fashion to the animated series, which is really interesting. Even the cover, you can tell that it has definite Bruce Timm influences. In fact, the story itself is pretty much a retelling, a shortened retelling of the first three episodes of the animated series. A little bit simplistic, but not a bad introduction if you're trying to get your kid into Superman. I mean, I had fun reading it, and I liked looking at the pictures. I mean, what does that say about me? But seriously, it is a fun read, and for only $4.95, it's definitely worth a purchase, you know, just to have on your shelf, or for your children, or your grandchildren, or your nieces and nephews, whatever the relation is. Any little girl or little boy is definitely going to enjoy this. And they have more than just Superman. They also have Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, and Batman. So get your kids hooked on comics, folks. I'm going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll take a look at this episode's Adventures of Superman episode, and then pretty much close out the show.
After the theatrical cartoons, after the movie serials, a new medium helped define an icon for generations to come.
The Adventures of Superman.
Join Mike Zumo as the Man of Screen podcast enters the next phase with a year-long look at the 1950s television series The Adventures of Superman, starring George Reeves as Clark Kent and Superman.
No comment until the time limit is up.
Phyllis Coates as Lois Lane during season one.
What are you afraid of? What are you hiding?
And Noel Neal as Lois Lane starting in season two.
Why did you wait?
Jack Larson as Jimmy Olsen.
Mr. Kent is Superman.
John Hamilton as Perry White.
Don't call me Chief!
And Robert Shane as Inspector Henderson.
I don't want excuses, I want action.
So, follow along Mike and some possible guest hosts for an in-depth analysis of The Adventures of Superman, starting in June at supermanpodcastnetwork.com and manofscreen.podomatic.com.
This is a job for Superman. I mean, I've got to find him.
We're back. Alright, so this episode's Adventures of Superman episode is entitled The Mind Machine. And again, this synopsis comes from James Lance over at the Superman homepage, but the original broadcast date of this episode is November 7th, 1952, written by Dennis Cooper and Lee Backman, directed by Lee Sholem, stars George Reeves as Superman slash Clark Kent, Phyllis Coates as Lois Lane, John Hamilton as Perry White, and a guest star as Griff Barnett as Dr. Edward Stanton, Dan Seymour as Lou Kranick, Ben Weldon as Curly, James C.A. as Senator Taylor, Harry Hayden as Carl Wagner, Lester Doerr as the bus driver, Frank Orth as Al, and Stephen Carr as John Hadley. Dr. Edward Stanton and his assistant John Hadley are working in their laboratory on the hypnotherapy transmitter, a device intended to make contact with a person's mind to treat minor nervous disorders. If the project is successful within its 25-mile range, imaginary fears and phobias can be cured. Stanton has been working on this invention for the past 5 years. 3 masked men have just entered. They're taking Dr. Stanton and his machine. Hadley has been ordered not to go to the police, otherwise Stanton will most certainly perish. Lou Kranick, better known as Mr. Big, has been dubbed by the Daily Planet as the kingpin of all organized crime in Metropolis. Tomorrow, Senator Taylor and his crime committee will begin interrogating many people about Mr. Big's illegal activities. Among those being questioned will be Lois Lane, who had exposed the mobster's racket in a series of newspaper articles. As the hearings are being discussed by editor Perry White, Clark Kent, and Lois, Cub reporter Jimmy Olsen tells Kent that Hadley is in his office. Dr. Stanton's assistant tells the mild-mannered reporter of the kidnapping and theft that had occurred the previous night. Clark makes no promises, but he will do what he can to find Dr. Stanton and the hypnotherapy transmitter. What Hadley and Kent do not realize is that this new mystery may truly be a job for Superman. A personal ad has been placed in the Daily Planet asking for any information on the whereabouts of Professor Stanton, who is being held by Lou Kranick and his big gang in the Blue Mountains, about 20 miles from Metropolis. Curly, one of Mr. Big's men, shows his boss the newspaper. Kranick, however, doesn't want anyone to give Stanton to the Planet for the reward offered by the periodical. Mr. Big has other plans for Stanton. He wants the scientists to use the hypnotherapy transmitter on witnesses at the Senate Crime Committee's hearing to persuade them to change their testimony. Kranick has learned of the device from his henchman, Al, who had briefly worked as Dr. Stanton's chauffeur. Now, with the mechanism activated, Mr. Big's plans have been set into motion. Even the mighty Superman may not stop the Metropolis kingpin. Senator Taylor is questioning Carl Wagner, an accountant who had served as head bookkeeper of Mr. Big's Playtime Syndicate for several years. He is very cooperative until his image is in full focus on the hypnotherapy transmitter's screen. As Dr. Stanton operates the controls, Kranick gives Wagner orders through the device's microphone. Wagner has an odd look on his face as he claims to know nothing of Kranick. Lois Lane and Clark Kent are surprised by his change of heart. The pair of reporters ask for a statement, but Wagner, in his trance-like state, wants to be left alone. Curious by Wagner's odd behavior, Lois and Clark follow him, unaware that they are about to witness something extremely strange and deadly. To evade Lois and Clark, Wagner steals a woman's automobile. The pair of reporters follow him in Lois's car. Suddenly, Wagner gets a flat tire and is forced to hijack a school bus carrying 3 students. Unfortunately, the driver was trying to repair the brakes. Without them, the bus will go down the nearby hill at tremendous speeds, and the children will possibly meet their doom. Feigning that he'd prefer to check on the woman that Wagner left behind in the stolen car, Clark changes into Superman. The Man of Steel manages to stop the bus while Lois and the driver look amazed. The children are now safe, but Carl Wagner is dead. Severe brain damage caused by Stanton's mind machine has killed him. Mr. Big, Lou Kranick, has removed one obstacle that hindered his criminal operations, and he intends to eliminate more. So far, including Carl Wagner, 3 witnesses in Senator Taylor's investigations of Mr. Big have died of severe brain injuries from the hypnotherapy transmitter. Lois Lane is the next to testify against Kranick in spite of Perry White and Clark Kent's protests. Lois cannot just give her files to the Taylor Crime Committee because much of what she knows was memorized. John Hadley and Clark have been unsuccessful in convincing Senator Taylor to postpone the hearings. Their only course of action now is to find the hypnotherapy transmitter. Otherwise, Mr. Big's criminal organization will still run rampant in Metropolis. Clark and Hadley are pondering their options. The hypnotherapy transmitter uses a great deal of power and can be detected by radar when activated. Dr. Stanton's private airplane is equipped with a lot of state-of-the-art machines, including the aforementioned radar and a radio telephone. The craft may help Superman stop Lou Kranick before more innocent lives are taken. Lois will testify a half hour sooner than anticipated. She was originally to do so at 3 o'clock p.m., Krennic has learned of this from the live studio broadcast. Dr. Stanton refuses to help the mobster after discovering the news of three men's deaths caused by his invention. However, Krennic no longer needs Stanton. He will operate the machine himself. He'll rid himself of the scientist later. First, he must deal with his remaining enemies, beginning with Lois Lane. The hypnotherapy transmitter signal has been found by the radar in Dr. Stanton's plane. However, Clark has been told by Perry White via radio telephone Lois has just taken the witness stand. This means time is of the essence. Kent is forced to take drastic measures. He knocks out Hadley and puts the aircraft in automatic pilot mode. This gives him a chance to become Superman. The Man of Steel swoops into Lou Krennic's mountain hideout mere seconds before he can give Lois orders to change her testimony. Krennic and his two henchmen attack, but they are no match for the last son of Krypton. Meanwhile, Professor Stanton has smashed his mind machine. He never wants to invent another device that can fall into criminal hands. With Hadley still unconscious, Dr. Stanton's plane has run out of fuel. Stanton himself is watching over the dormant forms of Mr. Big's gang while Superman lands the aircraft safely. Later, on the way to Perry White's office, Clark Kent convinces Hadley that the lab assistant had actually done this. As the two men enter, Perry is angry with Kent's sudden absence. Superman saved Dr. Stanton, found the mind machine, and defeated Mr. Big. As a result of the recent events, Stanton will become a key witness in Senator Taylor's investigation of Lou Krennic. Meanwhile, Lois would also like to know where Clark was. "Well, Lois, I thought you were in danger. I just tried to help," Clark replies. "You?" Lois jeers. "Why should I need your help when I can always count on..." "I know. Superman," Kent says with a slight smile. I really like this one. There's a lot of great stuff in this episode, and a lot of it is really just from a technical aspect. I mean, yeah, we do have a really interesting and intriguing plot involving a mind control machine, which I'll touch on later, but there is a lot of technical stuff going on here. We see footage sped up to simulate cars going at incredible speeds, and we have images inside of the shot, so whenever we're looking at the mind control machine, we actually see footage of Lois Lane on the screen. So a lot of technical stuff in here, which is great for a cinema nerd like myself. We also get different shots of George Reeves flying. We have him taking off not once, not twice, but I think at least three times, doing a takeoff without the use of the springboard, which he would usually always use, and it was footage that they really recycled. So him jumping out of windows or from the entrance of an alleyway, you know, they would recycle that footage, but for this stuff, we get footage of him taking off from the ground. And yeah, it's not as great as something like you'd see in Man of Steel or Batman v Superman, or even Superman the movie, but it's still George Reeves doing a takeoff. And then the sequence with him flying up to save the plane, that's really cool. You know, you get to see new angles of him flying. There's even new footage of him rotating as he flies. It kind of makes his flying a little bit more, I guess, realistic. And yeah, I mean, flying men are not inherently realistic, but it becomes more real when he's actually moving instead of just doing the same position every time he flies. And that's not to say that I dislike the flying sequences in the Adventures of Superman TV show. I realize that it's totally a product of the time and what they were able to achieve back in the 1950s. Astounding. Absolutely astounding. I really like the idea of Superman going up against machines. I don't know, it's just something that's always kind of fascinated me. You know, Superman going up against robots, always going to be cool. I don't know, it's just cool to me. And maybe that's because while a lot of writers tend to turn Superman into a punching machine or into this godlike figure, and that's not to say that he isn't or that he can't be, he's ultimately a science fiction character. So putting him up against machines and robots of fantastic nature just kind of makes sense to me. And this is, I think, the first episode where we see Ben Weldon as a supporting character, or at least in the supporting cast. And he pops up a couple more times throughout the run of the Adventures of Superman show. And he plays a lot of Two-Bit Criminals. He's a really good actor. I like him. And Stephen Carr is actually a really solid actor. His scenes with George Reeves are pretty on the nose. Really solid acting from him. Very impressed by that. And yeah, if you've been on the internet for a while, there's a GIF or a GIF of Superman being shot by bullets, and then the criminal throws the gun at him and he ducks. And that happens in this episode. Kind of funny, because it really shouldn't hurt him, but it probably really would have hurt George Reeves. Just kind of a funny little visual gag, I guess. Overall, I'd recommend this episode. It's a pretty strong episode. I mean, there's a lot of tension and a lot of race against the clock kind of stuff going on here. And a lot of that is really heightened by the music. And that, I feel like that's one of the aspects of the show that isn't really talked about all that much. The music. And while I do know that they used a couple of motifs again and again, you know, I mean, they're still really good themes. Again, I strongly recommend this episode. So let's dive into the Essential Superman Encyclopedia. Adoria. A distant planet in another solar system in the universe of the pre-First Crisis Earth-1, inhabited by strong, beautiful, Amazon-like women and timid, bald-headed, diminutive men. As Clark Kent, Superman was tricked by Adoria's princess, Jenna, posing as a movie actress, into entering a spacecraft that the Man of Steel assumed was a prop for the film. It was, in fact, a real ship that took Superman to Adoria, where he was given a love potion that led to his marriage with Jenna. When he escaped captivity, the marriage was invalidated. This is in Action Comics number 266, cover dated July 1960. The Adversary. A foul-mouthed, leather-clad, cigar-chomping criminal who first appeared in the metropolis of the post-First Crisis Unified Earth for the sole purpose of starting seemingly unmotivated brawls with Superman. He then disappeared as mysteriously as he had arrived. That's in The Adventures of Superman, number 579, June 2000. He had powers that were the equal of Superman's, but seemed less knowledgeable, resourceful, or experienced. These bizarre encounters continued until the Man of Steel learned that the adversary was an agent of the demonic Lord Satanus, which led Superman to discover his foe's true nature. In a sense, this superpowered boy, a living caricature of a child's notion of macho, didn't really exist. When Brainiac 13 transformed Metropolis into the City of Tomorrow, the computer virus he unleashed on the city not only upgraded all technology, but also bestowed heightened consciousness on metahumans and certain others. One of these was a troubled, handicapped teen named Carrie Richards, whose latent psychic powers suddenly manifested themselves. The adversary was the result, a real-world incarnation of what angry young Richards imagined to be a worthy antagonist for the Superman he resented. Richards had been captured by the Man of Steel's old enemy, the Prankster, who was also under Satanus' spell at the time, and brought to Satanus' underworld lair, where he was persuaded that Satanus could help him refine and develop his psionic abilities and transform him into the adversary. Ultimately, Superman invaded Satanus' surreal netherworld and defeated him, rescuing Richards in the process. That's in The Adventures of Superman number 588, cover dated March 2001. Aesop, the leader of a gang of criminals on the pre-First Crisis Earth 2, who committed a series of crimes based on Aesop's fables. When Superman learned that Aesop's criminality began after a fall from a horse, he super-massaged the base of Aesop's skull to relieve the vascular pressure that had distorted his thinking, resulting in antisocial behavior. Aesop reverted to the responsible citizen he had been before his accident. And that's in Action Comics number 75, August 1944. Time for the super fact. Did you know that the distance from Earth to Krypton was 27.1 light years? And this episode's super quote comes from a very strange actor who would have been Superman and probably would have still faced a lot of negative backlash. That is Mr. Nicolas Cage. Superman is an American myth, like the English have Shakespeare. Good night, folks.
Warning. This episode's Superman song is extremely heavy and not for the faint of heart. Proceed with caution.
You know I will kill you for it. Cruel, golden talent, strength beyond what humans know. Seeking out a power source among your orders now. Condemned by the council, a ruling once again. A little to a suffering, your reign is Superman. Feeds on the sunlight, stealing his power.
Come before me, son of Jor-El.
Cloning his madness in our darkest hour.
Why defy you?
Take it by force, or will this revenge? You'll kneel before them and
what do you have?
Dead in the name of cruel new god. One way to worship, to kneel. Before Zod!
Zod!
For more Up, Up, and Away, visit www.upupandaway.podomatic.com. The show and other Superman-related goodies can be found on Facebook by searching Up, Up, and Away Podcast, and Mario can be contacted through email at mbenesi94@yahoo.com. That's B as in boy, E-N-N-E-S-E. Up, Up, and Away is a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, and Superman and all related images are property of DC Comics and Warner Brothers Entertainment. All images and music are property of their respective owners, and no infringement is intended. This is a non-profit fan podcast. Superman was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.